Today's guest on Meet the Press is Adlai Stevenson, our representative to the United Nations. Our panel consists of William R. Fry, Christian Science Monitor, Richard Clurman, Time Magazine, Pauline Frederick, NBC, and Lawrence E. Spivak. Here is our moderator, Ned Brooks.
Our guest today is Ambassador Adlai Stevenson, our chief delegate to the United Nations. He will be playing a vital role as the 16th General Assembly of the UN opens here in New York on Tuesday, facing a multitude of problems affecting the peace of the world. You've just met Lawrence E. Spivak, our permanent panel member. Our other reporters today are William Fry of the Christian Science Monitor, Richard Clurman of Time and Life magazines, and Pauline Frederick of NBC News. We'll continue the questioning with Mr. Fry.
Governor, I understand that President Kennedy is coming to the UN this Thursday to present, among other things, a major disarmament plan for total disarmament. Can you confirm this? Can you tell us a bit about what the plan will contain? Can you tell us what his objectives are in doing this?
Well, I can't confirm his intended visit here this Thursday, as you indicate, Mr. Fry, because I don't know whether he's coming or not. I don't think that decision has been made. If he should come, the content of his speech, what he will say, is, of course, still undecided in any final form. I would personally hope very much that the president would see fit to put his major emphasis on the interest of the United States, the priority that the United States attaches to the importance of disarmament, and that in doing so he could unveil, he could discuss a disarmament plan. I'm sure that everyone knows that the United States has been hard at work since this administration came into office on bringing up to date its views on disarmament. And certainly the importance of disarmament has been accentuated by the resumption of nuclear testing in recent weeks.
Well, would you say that this was a particularly good time to propose a disarmament plan in the midst of a Berlin crisis?
Personally, I think, and here I speak for myself, I think it's all the more reason for the most earnest support, advocacy proposals for disarmament, that as the world situation becomes more acute, as the danger mounts and the tensions increase, the hazards of accidental war, as well as war by calculation, increase, these are all the more reason for concentrating our attention earnestly and constantly on disarmament.
Well, some people are also concerned about the timing in this respect. Apparently this week there will be a real showdown fight on the seating of Red China, in which the United States position, of course, as you well know, will be most unpopular, at least with a majority and perhaps even with a solid majority of the UN people. Is this a good time for a United States peace offensive? Won't the glamour of it be rubbed off to some extent by the people that we will antagonize by our position on Red China?
I don't know about that. I haven't attempted to make that calculation, but I would say, Mr. Fry, that it's always a good time to make a peace offensive. That it's like it's always a good time to make an offensive against sin. Well, certainly the elimination of war, the liquidation of this obsolete institution is the most important business that confronts the human race.
Do you think that we're going to lose on Red China?
Well, I don't know what you mean by lose on Red China.
Do you think that Red China is going to be seated this year?
No, I doubt it very much.
Mr. Clurman.
Governor, continuing with the question of Red China, which is surely to be perhaps the most major question before this 16th session of the General Assembly, are there any terms under which you conceive of Red China being admitted to the UN?
Yes, I think it's possible that the members of the United Nations might vote China in, as Mr. Fry suggested. Red China.
And what is the American position on the admission of Red China and the expulsion of Nationalist China? Are there any terms or any grounds under which we would allow the expulsion of Nationalist China if Red China were admitted? Or is the possibility of expelling Nationalist China, excuse me, an issue roughly akin to our unwillingness under any circumstances to pull out of Berlin?
I'm afraid you may have to repeat the latter part of that, but let me answer the first part of it. The position of the United States is that we want to keep Nationalist China in the United Nations, and we want to keep Red China out of the United Nations. I don't know that we can do that. We certainly find that there is no, almost virtually no, support for any move to expel a Nationalist China. And we will make it our most earnest efforts to ensure the continuity of the seat of Nationalist China in this session of the General Assembly, and I think we'll succeed.
Do you know, Governor, the issue out of Mongolia is related to this. Do you know, Governor, whether the Taiwan government intends to veto the admission of Outer Mongolia?
I think that's my impression. That's my impression.
And
this
what do you,
is too bad. I regret it.
And what do you expect the effect of such a veto to be on the larger question of admitting Red China?
Well, you see, the effect of a veto on the admission of Outer Mongolia, right or wrong, is that the Soviet Union will veto the admission of Mauritania. And if the Mauritania is vetoed, then the French African states and perhaps other African states have indicated that they will exercise reprisals against Nationalist China for that veto. And this would affect, therefore, the admission of the decision of the assembly, or at least some votes in the assembly on that question.
Will the United States vote for both the admission of Outer Mongolia and Mauritania at this session of the United Nations?
Well, in order to protect the I can't answer that question categorically. Like all of these questions, they have to be decided in the conditions that prevail at the time. But certainly, and consistent with what I've said previously, that it's we'll make an earnest effort to preserve the seat of Nationalist China. If it appears that the best way to do that, or a contribution to that end, would be to support Outer Mongolia so as to avoid a Soviet veto, and therefore keep the goodwill of those French African states, I suspect that might be the decision of the United States.
Ms. Frederick.
Governor, is it my understanding that the United States will not object to debate on the China question at this session?
You're correct.
Now,
we will no longer attempt to defer debate prolong the moratorium, as it's called.
Now, is it my understanding that the United States then will try to have the subject declared one of importance or substantive, which would require a decision to have two-thirds majority vote?
This has been discussed, and I think that it's the view certainly of many, including our government, that this is an important question. Indeed, it's been called an important question for 12 years when it's been discussed in the United Nations. And in view of the fact that all questions in the structure of the charter that relate to membership require a two-thirds vote, I think this one should require a two-thirds vote.
And there have been stories...
As an important question,
yes.
Within the language of Article 18 of the Charter.
And there have been reports to the effect that if this fails, the United States may attempt, or even if it doesn't fail, may attempt to have the question deferred for a year by having a committee selected to study the China question and enlargement of the councils.
Well, I think you're half right. Certainly,
half is wrong?
I don't know that the United States will do that, but there is a good deal of sentiment developing for the appointment of a committee to study and report to the next session of the General Assembly all of the matters relating to the representation of China. These include the criteria for membership generally, the specific question of the representation of China as we know it, whether it should be the regime in Peking or whether it should be the nationalist Chinese government on Taiwan. And finally, the question of the composition of the councils. The China was a founding member of the United Nations and one of the permanent members of the Security Council, so that a seat in the Security Council is also involved in this question. And what happens to this seat in the event that there's any change in the representation of China is an intricate matter. So I think you can say that there will be certainly a movement to review this whole matter. And if this question of the seat has to be in the Security Council has to be re-examined, this would be a very logical time to also consider study the enlargement of the councils, of both the Security Council and the Economic and Social Council. I remind you, as you well know, Miss Frederick, that the United Nations has doubled in size since these councils were created, and yet there's been no increase in the size of the councils. So the Security Council and the Economic and Social Council, so that there's a good deal of feeling on the part of the new members that they aren't adequately represented.
Governor, if these procedures fail, obviously designed to delay the China question another year, do you feel that the American public is prepared to see Red China seated in the United Nations if a majority so decides?
Well, I expect there'll be a great protest in the United States in the event that that should come to pass. But when you say, I don't know what they can do about it in the event that they elect them, there is, of course, but I do want to say, if I may, by way of correction to your conclusion, that this is designed to delay. This isn't designed to delay. This is designed to determine in a rational and reasonable and deliberate way all of the problems, the implications of the representation of China in the United Nations. There's never been any study of the criteria for admission. There's never been any review of the composition of the councils. And both of these are affected by this question. So it would seem, in the view of many delegations, not just the United States at all, that such a review would, such a study would be very desirable. Indeed, that no proper decision could be made without one.
Mr. Spivak.
Governor, what do you think the consequences to the UN would be if Red China were admitted?
My first impression is that they would be serious. It's a little difficult for me to foretell with any certainty what the results would be. We've noticed in recent years that communist regime in China has become more and more chauvinist, more and more bellicose, more and more aggressive, and just the other day the expression, I believe, of the Chinese when the Soviet resumed nuclear testing was that this is an inspiring event or something of that kind. These are very disturbing aspects about China, and I'm afraid, therefore, that they would introduce a very a note in the deliberations of the United Nations which might be very bellicose and not in the least harmonious.
Governor,
and it also presents problems, if you'll let me go a little further, of course, representation in the Secretariat. We have the problem of the distribution of positions in the Secretariat among all of the nations, especially on a geographic or a regional basis. If China comes in representing one-fourth of the people of the world, this would present a lot of problems as to how the Chinese would be adequately represented in the Secretariat.
Governor, have you in recent months changed your position on the admission of Red China? I believe there was a time when you felt that it might serve a useful purpose if Red China was admitted.
No, my view has never changed about this. I don't purport to know whether it would serve a useful purpose or not. I know that it can. It's not the position of our government that it should be admitted, and that we'll do everything we can to ensure the seat of nationalist China.
Well, are you saying then that there is a difference between the position of our government and your position on the question of admission?
Well, I'm not familiar with any.
No, I just wondering, wasn't there a time when you felt, when you were against, you were for the admission of...
No, I've never been for the admission of China. I've always said that we would have to face the time sooner or later when we couldn't keep it out by refusing to discuss it.
I see,
and I'm afraid we have reached that time.
But you didn't. Didn't you at one time think that as a member of the United Nations, Communist China, with a quarter of the world's population, would be more accountable to world opinion than as an outcast?
This is a position that has been expressed by many people. I myself don't have any answer to this question, but I think it's quite possible.
Governor, I'd like to take you for a minute to the Congo. The West has been against the use of force in settling any dispute. On what grounds do we now justify the United Nations military action against Katanga and against Chamba?
Well, it's justified by the Secretary on the ground that he is fulfilling the obligations, mandate of the resolution of last February, which called upon him to keep the peace in the Congo, to maintain establish the territorial integrity of the new state, and to prevent outbreaks and tribal and warfare and civil war. Therefore, in order, when it was an invasion of the Katanga was threatened by by the central government forces, the United Nations, at the request of Prime Minister Dula, acted first.
The Security Council gave the UN a mandate to prevent civil war. Did it, however, give the UN a mandate to take the side of one of the adversaries involved?
It gave the United Nations authority to ensure the integrity of the Congo, the territorial integrity of the Congo. Now, what we have had here is a secession by Katanga, and an attempted secession by Katanga. There was an attempted secession by Oriente, by the area called Stanleyville, also by Kasai. These two parts of the Congo, these two provinces, have now joined the central government. The only one that is still holding out is Katanga. That if the country, and Katanga represents, as you know, 60% of the revenues of the state, and if the state is to survive and to flourish, clearly it has to be unified, and Katanga has to join up. This is what is being attempted.
If an attempt were made, for example, in Cuba to start a revolution against Castro, is there a chance, for example, that the UN would work against that group in order to establish peace in Cuba?
Oh, no. I don't think there's any... This isn't comparable to an internal revolution. Here's a new state which was just established and which called for the United Nations to come in to exercise its... through its presence, to exercise its influence over the... to ensure the development of this state in a peaceful and harmonious way. It has no bearing, no relevance whatever to the situation that would exist in a domestic revolution in an existing state.
Mr. Fry,
may I draw your attention to this same problem, but in a somewhat different context? Here, for the first time in Katanga, the United Nations has sought to impose the will of the world community upon a party considered to be the wrongdoer. This seems to imply the possibility of new teeth for the UN, if we could put it that way. Do you regard this as a constructive a precedent for the future, or do you regard it as a dangerous one?
Well, I don't want to confuse what I think is a desirable development in the history of the United Nations with the execution of an individual program, such as the present campaign in the Katanga. I'm not clear in my mind. I don't know enough about the facts, and we've found it very difficult to ascertain them as to whether or not this is well executed or not. But that generally that the United Nations can be used to keep the peace by operational activities of the kind that we have witnessed both in the dispute between Israel and its neighbors, that we exercise presently in the Gaza Strip, and that we are exercising now in the that the United Nations is exercising in the Congo seems to me desirable.
Do you think Mr. Hammarskjöld has been strengthened by this action in his defense against Khrushchev and the Troika and so on? Is he more popular? Is he on more solid ground?
I think the Afro-Asians approve of what he is doing. I'm sure that there's nothing that he can do that of which the Soviet Union would approve.
We have about 2 minutes. Mr. Clermont.
Governor, there are some few Americans and perhaps more Europeans who feel that to fight a nuclear war over Berlin, that Berlin is not worth that, that we should yield to the Russians rather than fight a nuclear war over that. I wonder if you'd tell us what you think about that point of view.
Well, of course, I don't think we should ever yield to the Russians, and I pray God that we're not going to be confronted with that choice. I can't foretell with any confidence, with any certainty. I must say I think the situation now is more alarming than it's been for a long while, but I still don't see that war is going to be any solution. Is going to be serve the advantage of either party. And I therefore don't recognize this, the imminence of this danger. As far as submission to the Soviet Union, I think we should bear in mind, and our more timid friends, that our country and they likewise have great power, great retaliatory power, and that this is known to the Soviet Union.
Ms. Frederick.
Governor, I think most people are more very concerned that the two major powers seem to be headed on a collision course with all the military might they can accumulate. What are the chances of reason preventing this collision? You say that the United Nations probably cannot do very much about it. It's up to the two powers themselves.
I think the United Nations, if I said that, I want to amend it, can exercise great moral influence over the powers. If the United Nations did that, if it distinguished between right and wrong, it can exercise a great moral influence, and I hope very much that it will. I think the confrontation of the powers is alarming. I think they hope that they will see the reason and that they will extricate themselves by negotiation, by peaceful conciliation of the dispute over West Berlin,
I'm going to have to interrupt. I'm sorry, but I see that our time is up.
Thank you, Ned Brooks. We'll give you the details about Meet the Press in just a moment.
To the ancient Greeks, Apollo was a god of youth and beauty. To us, Apollo was a space project for putting man on the moon. 2.5 days to get there, 6 days for exploration, another 2.5 days for the return to Earth. NBC News will be reporting the exciting details of this space journey within 6 years, possibly less. This is Peter Hackus reminding you that for the equally important down-to-earth developments in today's world, stay in touch with NBC Radio News on the Hour.
The U.S. Department of Labor reminds employers and workers alike